So, okay, so let's just sit down. Put my glasses on. And let's start the script. My current health, including the reason for my shakiness. Hello, my name is Kurt Joman. I am a retired 64-year-old man as I record this video in October 2020. My reason for recording this video is to give an overview of what is in my book. But before I do that, I want to talk briefly about my current health, because depending on the final resolution you watch this video at, you may notice that my upper body, especially my hands, are shaky. The reason for this shakiness is Parkinson's disease. More specifically, in early 2014, when I was 58 years old, I noticed a small shaking in both my hands. I did some research and concluded that I had a condition known as essential tremors, which is not dangerous, so nothing to worry about. But in 2018, when I was 62 years old, the shakiness in my hands had worsened, and by early 2019, when I was 63 years old, the shakiness in my hands had worsened further, and I concluded that I probably had Parkinson's disease. So I got an appointment with a neurologist, and his diagnosis was what I expected. I had Parkinson's disease. Since then, I have been taking the standard medication for Parkinson's disease, which is a drug called carbidopa-levodopa, but it has not done much for my shaky hands. In addition to getting Parkinson's disease, my 60s have not been good for my health. My type 1 diabetes, which I got at age 30, and about which I devote one paragraph in my book, became substantially more difficult to deal with in my 60s in terms of avoiding low blood sugar events. And ultimately, I had to do a lot more testing and drink a lot more of what I call sugar shots, sugar mixed with water, which is probably the biggest reason why I'm currently about 30 pounds above my trim weight. As another sign of my aging, about 2 months after I turned 60, I started losing the hair on the top of my head. Okay, that's enough about my current health. It's time to talk about my book.
Okay.
About my book. I am the author of a book that I completed and published in 2017. The book's title is A Soliton and Its Owned Bions, Awareness and Mind, and its subtitle is These Intelligent Particles Are How We Survive Death. I have placed this book in the public domain, and it is free at my website, solitoncentral.com. In this video, any use or appearance of the word chapter, section, subsection, or footnote are all referring to that specific chapter, section, subsection, or footnote in my book. Also, whenever I say the word quote, that means I'm about to quote from my book. And when I say the words close quote, that marks the end of that quote from my book. My book has some science and some math in it, but nothing deep or difficult, I believe. As I explain in the autobiography chapter in my book, my motivation for writing this book, which presents what I call the computing element reality model, is that I found both materialism and current religions inadequate reality models that could not explain my experiences, especially my many OBEs, out-of-body experiences that I had as a result of doing OM meditation. Regarding computer science, I have an undergraduate degree in computer science from Rutgers University and both a master's and PhD in computer science from the University of Florida. And besides my formal education in computer science, I have also done a lot of computer programming work in my life. Okay, that's the end of this little script. And that reading was pretty good, so. The book's title and its meaning. As already stated, the book's title is A Soliton and Its Own Bions, Awareness and Mind. Within my book, I give the two words soliton and bion, each a very specific definition. A soliton is an intelligent particle that has an associated awareness. We each have one soliton, and this is the seat of one's consciousness. A bion is an intelligent particle that has no awareness. A bion is always unconscious. My book has two main points. The first main point in my book is what I call the computing element reality model, which states that our reality is computed by a three-dimensional array of tiny computing elements. And this three-dimensional array of tiny computing elements is the three-dimensional space of our universe in which we exist. And each of these computing elements has its own unique, unchanging XYZ coordinate in that space. Also, quote, a computing element is a self-contained computer with its own memory. Each computing element can communicate with its adjacent computing elements, and each computing element runs its own copy of the same large and complex program called the computing element program. Close quote. The second main point in my book is briefly stated by the book's title, that within the computed reality of our universe, each entity that has an awareness, and this includes but is not limited to us humans, exists as a single soliton with an associated awareness that is literally surrounded by a large number of bions that belong exclusively to that soliton and cannot leave that soliton. That soliton, in effect, owns those bions, and those owned bions, including the current programming and stored data in those owned bions, collectively form and serve that soliton's associated awareness as its mind. Regarding a soliton and its owned bions, I say in my book, quote, for convenience, because they are always kept together, regardless of where they are, an awareness, a soliton, and its mind, that soliton's owned bions, will often be referred to simply as awareness mind or soliton mind. The awareness mind phrase emphasizes more the soliton as the seat of our consciousness. And the soliton mind phrase emphasizes more that the seat of our consciousness is itself an intelligent particle. Close quote. Regarding that last sentence in that just quoted text, I used the phrase our consciousness because I was trying to convey the idea that the two phrases, awareness mind and soliton mind apply to each conscious being, all of us who are conscious. However, with the passage of time, I now see that phrase, our consciousness, as being too ambiguous, and replacing it with the phrase, one's consciousness would be better. An interesting detail in my book that I want to mention here about a soliton and its associated awareness and that soliton's owned bions is that based on the two solitonic projections that I had, one's awareness is perceived by itself during a solitonic projection as being a point with no internal structure at the center of a surrounding spherical shell. And I assume that that perceived surrounding spherical shell is composed of that soliton's owned bions. Also, based on my second solitonic projection, I was able to estimate the size of that surrounding spherical shell as being roughly an inch, about 2.5 centimeters in diameter. Regarding when one's soliton and its own bions came into existence and how much longer they will last, I don't really know, but I give an opinion in the first paragraph of section 6.3, which in effect says that in our solar system, we have probably already existed billions of years and probably still have billions of years left to exist in our solar system. However, as I said, this is just my opinion, and I don't really know. Okay, that's the end of this script. Common particles and intelligent particles. In the computing element reality model, common particles are simple particles with simple state information. All the particles of physics, such as photons, electrons, and quarks, are common particles, and all common particles are unconscious. Intelligent particles have only two types, solitons and bions, and only the soliton has an associated awareness, also known as consciousness. The reason that solitons and bions are classed as intelligent particles is because, unlike common particles, intelligent particles can have what I call learned programs. A lot is said about learned programs in my book. The learned programs in your mind being your soliton's owned bions, give your awareness what you consciously experience as being your intelligence, your memories, your senses, and your control over your body, assuming you are currently in a body. Okay, that's the end of this very short little script. We each have an allocation plan. One of the key ideas presented in my book is that the soliton has a large unchanging number of input channels, and each soliton has the same number of input channels, and these input channels are consistently referred to in my book as awareness particle input channels, because data sent to these input channels from the soliton's owned bions will be experienced by the awareness associated with that soliton. Also, the human mind has many different functional parts that can generate output for the awareness, and the extent to which that output from a specific mind part can be experienced or felt by the awareness is proportional to how many awareness particle input channels are currently carrying that output to the awareness. For example, quote, the strength of the orgasm feeling and of feelings in general is proportional to the number of awareness particle input channels carrying the data that causes that feeling, close quote. And also, quote, the reason that the strength of a feeling would be proportional to the number of awareness particle input channels carrying the data that causes that feeling is because this is a simple and reliable arbitration method for the awareness particle. In effect, the strength of a feeling is proportional to the number of votes for that feeling, with each input channel counting as one vote. The alternative, having the strength of a feeling encoded as part of the input data for that feeling, would be dangerous, as it would mean that a single input channel would have the capability to deliver a very strong feeling, close quote. And very important for us humans regarding the human mind, there are not enough awareness particle input channels to fully connect all the mind parts that can generate output for the awareness. Thus, each human person has, in effect, an allocation plan that specifies how the awareness particle input channels are allocated among that person's many different mind parts that can generate output for the awareness. Having many different allocation plans is a major way that people differ from each other. During human embodiment, one cannot consciously make changes to one's allocation plan. Instead, there must be a learned program in one's mind that manages one's allocation plan and has control over when and what changes, if any, are made to that allocation plan. For a typical person, there will be at least some changes to one's allocation plan at different stages in one's human life. For example, as a human child, one has a large allocation of awareness particle input channels to whichever mind parts allow one to learn a new language so that one can easily and quickly learn whatever spoken and or written language or languages one is exposed to as a child. But for a typical person, a lot of that allocation gets reallocated elsewhere at the time of puberty, with at least some of that allocation being reallocated to what I call the sexual mind part. Later in life, for myself and probably for most men, during middle age, there is a substantial reduction in the allocation to one's sexual mind part, and that loss by one's sexual mind part becomes available to be reallocated elsewhere, to one or more of one's other mind parts. Besides language learning and sex, there are many other examples and descriptions of allocation changes in my book. Okay, I think that was the first good reading without any mistakes of that script right there. So, the life cycle for us humans. Because both the soliton and the bion are elementary particles that are not composed of other particles, and also because the computing element program always keeps a soliton and its own bions together, the end result for us humans and the other physically embodied animals that have a soliton mind, such as cats and dogs, for example, is a life cycle that typically runs as follows. Having a physical body until the death of that physical body, followed by a time in the afterlife without any physical body, typically lasting for us humans at least many months, if not many years, and ending with reincarnation back into a new physical body, most likely as the same kind of animal one was before, because one's mind already has the programming for living as that animal type. The afterlife for us humans is covered in detail in my book, including describing the two stages of the afterlife, the bion body stage, followed by the typically longer lucid dream stage. In the lucid dream stage, you no longer have a body of any kind, neither a physical body nor a bion body. And because of this lack of a body, your awareness mind can expect to be overall much more consciously intelligent than when you had a body, for the reason given in my book. Regarding reincarnation, the obvious question one can ask oneself is this: if reincarnation is real, why don't I remember my previous incarnation? The answer I give in my book includes this summary statement. Quote, regarding memories, such as our own personal memories, including memories of events in our own lives, for each of us, these memories are stored in one's mind, the soliton's owned bions. However, because there is a fixed limit on the size of a bion's memory, and also there is a fixed unchanging number of bions composing one's mind, there is a limit on how many memories and how much other data a mind can retain. The management of one's memories depends on the learned programs in one's mind. However, as available storage for memories becomes filled, storing new memories requires replacing old memories. Thus, one's mind either forgets one's past or one's present, and because in general, newer memories are more valuable and relevant to one's current situation than older memories, we humans, as time passes, forget details from our past. This finite memory that each of us has is also an underlying reason why, for at least most of us, we have no memories of our existence before our current human life. Close quote. Regarding this memory loss that happens to each of us humans as we each progress through our life cycle of physical embodiment, followed by afterlife, followed by physical embodiment, followed by afterlife, and on, here is another relevant statement in my book. Quote, also, in general, memories are deleted from memory storage over time to make room for new memories, and a lot of this memory loss probably happens for a typical person around the time of reincarnation to make room for new memories in the new life. In addition, a lot of this memory loss is probably already happening during the lucid dream stage of the afterlife, because that is a new life unto itself with its own need for new memories in a very different environment than when one was physically embodied in the physical world. The lucid dream stage of the afterlife may be when one forgets the majority of one's memories of one's physical life. And soon after reincarnating is probably when a typical person loses his memories of his time in the afterlife and also loses whatever remains of his memories of his previous life in a physical body. Close quote. Okay, I think that was a good reading. Jeez. The Salatan Directory. Anytime the computing element program creates an intelligent particle, either a soliton or a bion, that intelligent particle is assigned a large randomly generated number that will always be an unchanging attribute of that intelligent particle and will, in effect, serve that intelligent particle as its unique identifier for as long as that intelligent particle exists. Presumably, the random number generating algorithm used in the computing element program to generate a particle's unique identifier will be good enough so that it will be extremely unlikely that in a given solar system there will be two or more intelligent particles having the same unique identifier. Also, anytime an owned bion, a bion owned by a soliton, sends a message to one or more particles, that message always includes that sending bion's unique identifier and also the unique identifier of the soliton that owns that bion. The end result is that whenever a soliton mind receives a message from a different soliton mind, that receiving mind can check what I call its soliton directory to see if the soliton that owns the bion that sent that message has an entry in that receiving mind's soliton directory. And if so, then the data saved in that entry, along with the message itself, can be input to those learned programs in the receiver's mind that will decide what to do with that received message. In general, probably the most important and useful piece of data in that soliton directory entry will be the total relationship score. For an entry in a person's soliton directory, here a person is a soliton mind, the total relationship score is a signed integer. And quote, in general, an interaction with a person that results in substantial feedback, either positive or negative, from one's own soliton will have a non-zero relationship score, either a positive or negative number stored with the memory of that interaction. And this relationship score is added to the total relationship score. Close quote. Your Soliton directory, besides being presumably useful to your mind while you are in your physical body dealing with the significant people in your life, your Soliton directory can be useful in other contexts. For example, during a lucid dream, and also during the lucid dream stage of the afterlife, your Soliton directory is used by an algorithm given in my book that allows you to spatially locate and then move to wherever a person known to you who has an entry in your Soliton directory currently is, assuming both of you are currently active in the lucid dream environment. Another way that your Soliton directory can be useful to you involves maintaining relationships across different lives. Quote, as long as a person's entry remains in one Soliton directory, the total relationship score for that person is a summary of one's past experiences with that person, and this will be useful after the loss of past life memories, because there is always the possibility of re-encountering that person's Soliton mind sometime in the future when one is again in physical embodiment or again in the lucid dream environment. Also, a future re-encounter can be planned. For example, two persons who have a large positive total relationship score for each other could agree in the afterlife to meet again when they are both human again, and then each of them chooses parents so that they will both live in the same country and speak the same language. And then it is up to their unconscious minds to arrange sometime in the future a physical meeting between the two. However, because human life in general is filled with so much unpredictability, including the possibility of hazards and circumstances beyond one's control, an actual physical meeting between the two might not actually happen, regardless of what they agreed to before reincarnating. A more certain way to guarantee a physical meeting in the next human life is to reincarnate into a family or extended family as siblings or close relatives. But this option, unless the culture allows it, such as cousin marriages in some cultures, would not be the choice of married couples or lovers who want to become again with each other, a married couple or lovers. Close quote. That's the end of this script. And I think I read it perfectly. The caretakers. So, who or what are the caretakers? As I say in my book, quote, there is nothing in the computing element reality model that implies a need for common particles in the composition of a sentient being. Instead, only intelligent particles are needed. And as shown in earlier chapters, even we humans who have physical bodies exist quite well without them. Thus, given these considerations, it seems very likely that a large fraction of the sentient beings in the universe do not have a physical body and never have one at any time in their life cycle, unlike humans who alternate having a physical body with not having one. Physical embodiment alternates with the afterlife. It is likely that civilizations of such beings, who never have a physical body exist widely throughout the universe, and it is likely that at least some of these civilizations are highly advanced in their ability to interact with physical matter and in their scientific knowledge of the physical." Close quote. In my opinion, we have such a civilization in our solar system, and this civilization is probably billions of years old, and many of its members are directly involved with our Earth and its organic life, including involvement with humanity. Each member of this civilization, which I call the caretakers, has an awareness mind and also a bion body. However, there is a big difference between a caretaker's bion body and a human's bion body, including a human's afterlife bion body. The big difference is that the human bion body is composed of cell-controlling bions whose learned programs are mostly concerned with making and keeping organic cells alive on a microscopic scale. And being composed of cell-controlling bions is why the human bion body cannot make contact with macroscopic physical objects. In contrast, the learned programs in the bions composing a caretaker's bion body have nothing to do with organic cells, and instead have evolved to meet the needs of the caretakers, which includes being able to make contact with and manipulate macroscopic physical objects. Regarding the caretakers and humanity, obviously the caretakers in general are keeping hidden from modern humanity, probably to avoid influencing our human civilizations, and probably also to avoid requests and or demands from humans who would want caretaker help. In general, remaining hidden from humanity is easy for the caretakers to do because the caretakers have nothing physical in their composition that we could see or hear with our physical senses when we are in our physical human bodies. Regarding the intelligence of the caretakers, I say, quote, "The first humans may have been caretakers, although as soon as they became human, they were no longer caretakers. This may be how certain parts of the human mind, including its intellectual parts, were inherited from the caretakers." Close quote. And also, quote, "Given the discussion of the caretakers in previous chapters, it is reasonable to assume that the caretaker's civilization is more intelligent than the most intelligent human nation." Close quote. Beyond what I already say about caretaker intelligence in my book, and assuming that the intellectual parts in the human mind were inherited from the caretakers and are basically the same in both caretakers and humans today, here is a reason, not given in my book, for why an average adult caretaker is probably substantially more intelligent than an average adult human in the most intelligent human nation. And this reason is differences in their allocation plans. More specifically, consider how many of its awareness particle input channels an average adult caretaker devotes to controlling, having a sense of touch, and protecting its bion body, compared to how many of its awareness particle input channels an average adult human in the most intelligent human nation devotes to controlling, having a sense of touch, and protecting its physical human body. For the sake of this argument, Let's just assume that they both allocate the same number of awareness particle input channels for controlling their respective bodies and having a sense of touch. Okay, but how many awareness particle input channels do they respectively devote to protecting their respective bodies? Given what is said in my book about bions and how a bion body is held together, the bion body of a caretaker is completely invulnerable to damage and harm of any kind. So one can assume a zero allocation of a caretaker's awareness particle input channels to protect its bion body. But in sharp contrast to the caretaker's invulnerable bion body, a human's physical body is extremely vulnerable to damage and harm of various kinds from various causes, and thus, for an average adult human in the most intelligent human nation, one can assume a very large allocation of awareness particle input channels to protect his physical human body. Two examples of large allocations for this physical body protection purpose in an average human adult is how extreme he can feel pain in his physical body and how much emotional fear he can feel for his own physical safety. The end result is that an average adult caretaker can devote a lot more of its awareness particle input channels to being intelligent than an average adult human in the most intelligent human nation can. Oh, wow. That's a lot of text to read. I think I read that pretty good. I'm not aware of any major mistakes made. Let's just get up and stop the recording. A quick review of the book's 10 chapters. Before its 10 chapters, my book begins with a short preface and introduction that set the tone for the book. For example, from the introduction, quote, "A reality model is a means for understanding the universe as a whole. Based on the reality model one accepts, one can classify things as either possible or impossible. The reality model of 20th century science is the mathematics-only reality model. This is a very restrictive reality model that rejects as impossible any particle whose interactions cannot be described with mathematical equations. If one accepts the mathematics-only reality model, then there is no such thing as an afterlife, because according to that model, a man only exists as the composite form of the simple mathematics-obeying common particles composing that man's brain, and death is the permanent end of that composite form." Close quote. Chapter 1 is titled The Computing Element Reality Model. This chapter describes the basics of the computing element reality model and says that our reality is computed. Chapter 2 is titled Biology and Bions. This chapter begins with defining the intelligent particle I call a bion, and stating that bions in the context of organic life make organic cells alive. The remainder of this chapter describes a few specific cellular processes such as cell division and multicellular development, and makes an argument for why bions are involved in those cellular processes. Chapter 3 is titled The Brain and the Mind. This chapter begins with a discussion of neurons and the brain, and makes arguments for why human intelligence and memory is done by computers that do not exist in the physical substance of the brain. Next, learned programs are explained. Next, reasons are given for why these cell-controlling bions that make the nerve cells of one's brain alive, referred to as brain bions, are different and separate from the bions that compose one's mind, referred to as mind bions. Next, Chapter 3 ends with Section 3.8, which, quote, presents in detail various algorithms, data structures, and code that, among other things, support the development of multicellular animals, including the development of one's own physical body. Close quote. Chapter 3 also has two miscellaneous items in it that may be of interest to the reader. Regarding psychedelics, footnotes 16 and 17 discuss psychedelics, and in particular LSD, and footnote 17 gives an explanation, assuming the computing element reality model, for how and why psychedelics affect one's mind. Also, regarding gravity, and likewise assuming the computing element reality model, footnote 23 gives an efficient gravity algorithm. Chapter 4 is titled Experience and Experimentation. This chapter begins with a discussion of psychic phenomena such as ESP, extrasensory perception, and what is possible and not possible given the computing element reality model. Next is a brief discussion of why bions cannot be detected by physical instruments. Next is a discussion of meditation using the syllable Om, with some quotes from the Upanishads. The Upanishads are a specific collection of ancient Hindu texts. Chapter 4 ends with a discussion of Kundalini, about which I say that Kundalini is an injury that can result from too much meditation. Wow. Okay, that's the end of that little script. I think I did okay on that. Yeah, I think that first reading was pretty good. I'll just quickly mention off script this little red spot, because I just reviewed the video part that I just recorded before this part, and I noticed this little red spot there. So that's a shaving cut, because I clean shaved, whatever, a few hours ago. Didn't notice it, but I noticed it when I saw the recording, so I guess it appeared soon after I had shaved. So occasionally I get shaving cuts. Okay, so enough of that. Chapter 5 is titled Out of Body Travels. Quote, this chapter considers two kinds of out-of-body experiences, lucid dream out-of-body experiences and bion-body out-of-body experiences. Close quote. There is also a lot of code in Chapter 5, including, for example, the large amount of code in subsection 5.2.3, about which I say, quote, for us humans, one's projected bion body always maintains the same shape and size as one's physical body. That wasn't just my own experience. that was also the experience of many others who have had bi-on-body projections and have had their projections written about. A bi-on-body projection involves both one's mind and also self-controlling bions in one's physical body. Thus, there is a learned program in one's mind and also a different learned program in self-controlling bions that work together to bring about a bi-on-body projection. The actual procedure for a bi-on-body projection probably looks like the following procedure, which details this interaction between one's mind and the self-controlling bions in one's physical body. And this procedure also results in a projected bion body that has the same shape and size as one's physical body. Close quote. Chapter 6 is titled Awareness and the Soliton. This chapter begins with a discussion of the soliton, making various statements about this intelligent particle and its owned bions. Next is a discussion of which animals in our physical world have an awareness mind instead of just a mind. Next, the solitonic projection, which is a rare out-of-body experience, is described. Chapter 6 ends with a detailed discussion of the afterlife process and some related subjects, including reincarnation. The bold-faced titles in this afterlife section, in the order they appear, will give an idea of the content. The bi-on-body stage of the afterlife. The lucid dream stage of the afterlife. Transitioning from one animal type to a different animal type. Birds of a feather flock together. And how a mind connects with a brain before birth. In that last part of Chapter 6, how a mind connects with a brain before birth. After I had first worked out the details of how that connection is made, I then realized that those details meant that so-called possession of one's body by another was not possible, and I ended Chapter 6 with this paragraph, quote, "In the case of humans, regarding the possibility of having one's physical body, in effect, taken over by a spirit or demon or entity or whatever one wants to call it, this is the idea of possession, of being possessed by a being other than oneself. However, because one's mind has already fully connected with one's brain, by the time of one's birth, it will be impossible for some other mind or awareness mind, regardless of how close in terms of distance it may be to one's brain, to receive any of the sensory data messages from one's brain, because only the specified recipients of those sensory data messages can receive those messages. And the specified recipients are mind bions in one's mind, identified by their unique identifiers. Likewise, that other mind or awareness mind, regardless of how close it may be to one's brain, cannot control any of the muscles that one's brain can activate, because the relevant brain bions in the motor cortex will only accept activate muscle messages from specific mind bions in one's mind, identified by their unique identifiers. In summary, having one's brain possessed by some other mind or awareness mind is impossible and does not happen. Thus, all stories of such possession are fiction. A related subject is multiple personality disorder, which is considered separately in section 9.7. Close quote. I'll just add here that the explanation for multiple personality disorder that I give in section 9.7 is in footnote 150 and has nothing to do with being possessed by some other mind or awareness mind. Chapter 7 is titled The Lamarckian Evolution of Organic Life. This chapter begins with Darwin's explanation for the evolution of organic life, which says, in effect, that randomness is the designer and natural selection discards designs that decrease the organism's ability to survive and reproduce, and keeps designs that increase the organism's ability to survive and reproduce. The thing doing what Darwin called natural selection, which discards bad designs and keeps good designs, is simply the environment in which the organism lives. The strength of Darwin's explanation is the natural selection part, and the weakness of Darwin's explanation is the randomness is the designer part. In fact, the claim that randomness is the primary designer or the only designer of organic life is very easy to debunk by using math arguments in which probabilities are computed. Many critics of Darwinism for many decades have made these math arguments. However, because current science is materialistic and does not recognize the existence of intelligent particles, current science is limited to offering randomness as the designer of organic life, despite the fact that it is easy to make math arguments that debunk randomness as the designer of organic life. The last section in Chapter 7 is titled Explanation by the Computing Element Reality Model of the Evolution of Organic Life and the Existence of the Caretaker Civilization. The explanation of organic life's evolution involves bions, with possible assistance in various ways done by the caretaker civilization. Chapter 8 is titled Caretaker Activity. The majority of this chapter discusses the subject of UFOs, unidentified flying objects. Although I agree with a lot of critics that there is a lot of fiction in the UFO literature, I think it likely that the caretaker civilization has and uses physical flying craft for reasons that I give in Chapter 8, and this results in some of the reported UFO sightings and encounters. The last section in Chapter 8, titled Interstellar Travel, includes this statement, which makes the possibility of future travel to another solar system by humans even less likely than it already is from an engineering, life support, rocket fuel, and power supply standpoint. Quote, "Also, regarding traveling to a distant solar system, the top speed at which the caretakers or an awareness mind in general can travel at may be much lower than light speed, because there is much more data to copy from one computing element to an adjacent computing element to move an intelligent particle through 3D space compared to moving a common particle through 3D space." Close quote. Okay. That's the end of this little script. Chapter 9 is titled The Human Condition. This chapter covers many different subjects. The seven sections in Chapter 9 are: Section 9.1 is titled The the age of modern man, according to Cremo and Thompson. This section gives some reasons to believe that modern man, in the sense of having the same kind of emotions and mental abilities as mankind today, has probably been on Earth for millions of years instead of only tens of thousands of years. Section 9.2 is titled The Gender Basis of the Three Races. This section gives evidence that the Black African race is more masculine, the Oriental race is more feminine, and the Caucasian race is in between. Section 9.3 is titled The Need for Sleep. This section, in the context of the computing element reality model, explains why intelligent particles sleep and what happens to an intelligent particle when it is asleep. Section 9.4 is titled A Brief Analysis of Christianity. This section is very critical of Christianity, attacking Christianity from multiple directions, including scholarship results by others, my own analysis of the psychology behind Christianity, and the fact that the alleged materializations done by Jesus, such as his alleged materialization of bread and fish to feed many people, are impossible given subsection 3.8.7. Section 9.5 is titled Karma. This section considers karma in the context of the computing element reality model. Then chapter 9 ends with section 9.6 titled Orgasm and section 9.7 titled Allocation Changes During Growth and Aging. These two sections discuss in detail the idea that the soliton has a fixed, unchanging number of awareness particle input channels, and we each have an allocation plan that specifies how these awareness particle input channels are allocated to the various parts of the human mind that can generate output for the awareness. And among other things, your allocation plan will, to a large extent, determine your athletic abilities, your intellectual abilities, and which of 10 different emotions you can feel and how strongly you can feel them. Regarding emotions, there is a lot of discussion and details given in section 9.7, including the following statement of purpose. Quote, regarding the idea that fear has a purpose, after thinking about it, I reached the conclusion that all the various feelings, including both good feelings and bad feelings, have purpose, and their purpose is that these various feelings are the primary means by which the unconscious mind influences the soliton without forcing the soliton's decisions. The soliton is still the ruler, but similar to the situation in a human government, the ruler is subjected to various influences coming from lower levels in that government. Also, the soliton may sometimes get conflicting feelings coming from different mind parts, which is similar to a human government where the ruler may sometimes be subjected to conflicting influences coming from different governmental departments. Note that none of the feelings we experience are generated by the soliton. Instead, all feelings are generated by the unconscious mind and sent to the soliton where they are felt. Close quote. Also, most of my attention in section 9.7 regarding emotions is focused on us humans, but I also have something to say about those non-human animals, such as cats and dogs and others that, like us, are conscious. Quote, the purpose of good feelings and bad feelings, explained in the previous paragraph, also applies to all the non-human animals that have a soliton mind. In general, the non-human animals that have a soliton mind probably have the same body feelings that humans have because their physical bodies have the same needs and vulnerabilities that the human body has. Also, I think it very likely that, in general, non-human animals that have a soliton mind typically get pleasurable feelings as a reward when they eat and drink and have sex. Regarding the list of 10 different human emotions given in a later footnote, at least some of those 10 different emotions, in addition to the fear emotion in that list, are probably also found in many of the non-human animal species that have a soliton mind. For example, if a non-human animal that has a soliton mind has the fear emotion, then that animal may also have the joy emotion as a counterweight to that fear emotion, and would probably experience the joy feeling when, for example, that animal comes across an unexpected food or water source. As another example, the happiness emotion, which, among other things, rewards acquiring food and rewards being a mother, may be a common emotion for the non-human animals that have a soliton mind. Close quote. Chapter 10 is titled A Brief Autobiography of Myself, Kurt Jomann. First, I talk about my own relevant experiences regarding lucid dream projections, bion-body projections, solitonic projections, and the Kundalini injury. Next, after a brief statement about my motivation for writing my book, I then give various details about my life. Oh, wow. Okay. I think I read that without any flaws. This is like the, ninth or probably roughly the eighth or ninth attempt, but I think I finally got it. Wow. What a struggle. So I've been... I'm placing this video and its script in the public domain. I, Kurt Jomann, am the creator and copyright owner. The copyright year is 2020 of both this video and its script. And I hereby place both this video and its script in the public domain. The script for this video, which includes the text of what I say in this video, can be found at my website, solitoncentral.com. Okay, that's the end of this video. Well, okay, that was easy enough.